everybody. Welcome to another edition of Wrestling with Death. I am your ghost host with the most. I'm not very confident today. The Reaper, Matt Connard. And my guest today is a repeater. But based on his last episode, it's a good thing. Marcus Mann.
Is this my turn now?
Yeah, you can talk.
I didn't know if you were going to do that Kevin Smith long intro where he put me over for like 15 minutes.
No,
on the podcast.
You do a good job of that yourself throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't know I was going to get one of those intros.
No, people.
Tell us about a person, but won't tell your name even though they're in the title of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Kevin Smith with Mark Hamill, and then it's like 15 minutes of like, this is a guy. I mean, he's a person.
Kevin, this is why we're listening. We saw Mark Hamill's on the show. We want to listen.
Just say his name and let him talk.
Make him do the Joker voice.
Yeah, that's all I listen
to. No, your episode got a lot of good feedback.
I think I'm the highest rated episode of Wrestling with Death. Am I the most views on YouTube?
Last time I checked, yes.
It's weird because I didn't even share the YouTube version.
You're neck and neck with Magnum.
Okay.
Like, you and Magnum are the two most popular.
All right. I don't know why, but recently I've done a couple shows. I mean, last time on the show I talked about how I wasn't doing shows anymore.
Yeah.
But I've been recently doing a couple more and going to shows. People have been saying like they heard me on the podcast or they've been listening to your stuff. Like, people have been talking about it. So I was like, I was real drunk and was like, we should do another one, and texted you. And then I wasn't too hungover. So.
Yeah, if I receive a text from you that late in that, that's a real, like, these aren't concrete plans.
It was real late, and I had been drinking, and I've been talking wrestling all night, and then I was like, I should podcast with Matt.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I could do that. And yeah. I was like, I'll text him, we'll do it tomorrow. And then, like, I came home and had all my Sheetz food, and then I was like, I'm gonna eat. Like, I like to watch TV when I eat. I'm one of those people.
Yeah.
So I was like, I find something to watch on TV. And there was, like, nothing because it was 4 in the morning. And the only thing I could find was we were midway through Good Will Hunting on HBO. So I put on Good Will Hunting, ate my tater tot platter, which is terrible for me. Like a chili cheese tater tot platter.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I was really drunk.
Ugh.
And then, like, passed out on the couch.
Yeah.
And woke up at 7 in the morning when my girlfriend was like, I didn't know you came home.
Yeah, I told you before we were chatting earlier how I got that text from you. I'm like, okay, we'll see what happens. Then I got the text from 4:30. I'm like, this isn't happening. Like, this really isn't happening.
I know.
He's still awake.
Yeah, we partied a little hard. I partied with Jock Sampson.
Which is always makes for a rough morning.
The fact that I'm walking today is a tribute to my resiliency. It's hard with Jock. So I got to hang out with him, which is awesome. No, actually, one of the reasons I wanted to do it was I've been talking a lot about creative stuff recently, doing Ben's podcast and your podcast around the same time. So I was like, let's do some more of that. Like, I think people like hearing the creative aspect of it.
They do. Because they hear people's life stories all the fucking time.
Yeah.
On every podcast ever.
Yeah. Like, I remember I listened to, like, Steve Austin's podcast, and you guys shouldn't. You should just listen to this one.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, I always enjoyed when he would talk to Kevin Nash, because they wouldn't even talk about, like, Nash's time in wrestling.
No, they talk about their diets and the weather.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
No, one of the reasons I did want to do it is you and I both recently have been reading a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been real similar in the books we've been reading.
Because
I just finished Steve Martin's biography.
Yep.
Or autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very close to finishing the Saturday Night Live book.
Yeah.
And you just read Billy Crystal's.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been kind of chatting here or there about, like, the world of comedy and how the world of wrestling kind of creatively, there's, like, a little bit of similarities there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
So I haven't read much of Billy Crystal's book. What do you think of it?
It's great.
Yeah.
I love books I can read from people where I can, as I'm reading, I can hear their cadence.
Yeah.
I can hear them, like, reading. Like,
yeah, you can hear their voice.
I can hear them in my head.
Like, when you read the Saturday Night Live book and you get to the stuff with, like, Norm Macdonald, like, you read everything in Norm's voice.
Yeah.
It's, like, impossible not to read it in Norm's voice.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. No, like, I think the SNL book, because I talked to Doe about SNL.
Uh-huh.
Like, when it's on the air, like every Monday or Tuesday, like Shirley Doe and I have a text conversation about Saturday Night Live that week,
yeah,
and about what was good, what wasn't, what was working, and I like reading the book has been really cool of like how much of a similarity the creative process is. As I'm reading it, going like, okay, that's real similar to a lot of my creative process, especially like, so the early part of the show, to me, definitely there's a lot of similarities between wrestling and the early part of the show of like these. Kind of groundbreakers that kind of come in here and, I mean, change the entire dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you have these, like, we talk a lot about now of, like, well, how come wrestling can't find big stars? You know, like, you know, how come WWE can't build big stars? Mm-hmm. And then you look at Saturday Night Live and they're saying the same thing of, like, well, why can't they build, like, why can't they get another Dan Aykroyd? Why isn't it another Bill Murray or Chevy Chase? Or Gilda Radner or John Belushi, and you're like, yeah, it was just a special time,
right?
Like the fact that we had an era where, you know, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and Roddy Piper were all together and working. It's just like, it's just magic.
The beginning of SNL is the spawning period. There was nothing like it before. So all the things those people did. We're laying groundwork. There's nothing to compare it to.
Exactly.
So as of now, you're asking all these, where's the Gildas, the Belushis, all this. You're comparing it to people who laid the foundation.
And yeah, and so like in a wrestling context, I think the same thing happens too much with younger wrestlers. Where people are looking at younger guys, especially like in WWE now, and they're going, well, like, look, who's the Hulk Hogan? Where's the Hogan?
Where's the next Rock?
Where's the next Rock? Where's the next Steve Austin? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, why don't you let them just do their thing and see if they're successful?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, you know, no, there wasn't another Dan Aykroyd on the show. No. But we had Phil Hartman.
Yeah. You know? Who doesn't get enough credit at all.
And so, like, Phil Hartman wasn't the next Dan Aykroyd. He was just Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
And then when Phil Hartman left the show, you know, we didn't have another Phil Hartman. We had Daryl Hammond,
mm-hmm.
you know. And when Daryl Hammond left, there was never going to be another Daryl Hammond.
But we had a Will Ferrell.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's these types of guys that can come in and do those types of roles.
Right.
And so I think with wrestling, I think people get so obsessed with, like, okay, especially, like, creatively, you know, you look at a, you know, show or a card and you go, like, well, you know, how we need another this guy or another that guy. And, like, they're going through, WWE's going through that right now, where they're like, well, we need another John Cena. So is Roman Reigns the next John Cena?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can't do that. Like, John Cena changed the mold. Like, I don't know if people realize this, but Monday Night Raw changed because of John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that literally, like, the structure of the show. If you will go back and watch old Raws, and I'm not talking about, like, the 90s, like, Raws. I'm even talking about, like, you know, early 2000s, like, 2001, 2002, yep. Raws and SmackDowns. The show format wasn't coming out with a 15, 20-minute promo. That wasn't the show format, like, every single show. But when they had Cena on top, Cena could carry those opening show promos for 15, 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
because he's so unique and he's so good at what he does that's why the show changed. And now that Cena's taking a back seat and they go, oh, well, all right, well, let's put Seth Rollins out there for the opening promo. It's like a 15-minute segment or Roman Reigns. Those guys aren't John Cena. And so, like, they may need to change the format of the show again because, you know, he broke the mold so much. And so everyone's sitting there going, like, well, who's the next John Cena? Who's the next this guy? It's you got to let Roman Reigns be Roman Reigns. You got to let Seth Rollins be Seth Rollins. And then on a smaller level, you know, an independent level, you got to do the same thing with those guys. You got to let them find their voices. And I think the big thing that SNL does well is when they rejuvenate and they get a new cast and it gets younger. You know, this season is a really good example with SNL where they had to kind of reboot the cast a little bit. They lost some kind of some anchors that have really been good sketch comedy guys in Taron Killam and Jay Farrow. You know, and they're just kind of rebounding off losing Sudeikis and Hader and Fred Armisen mm-hmm. and those really good sketch guys. So they're in a rebuilding period. Seth Meyers as well, even his head writer was really bad for that.
Yeah.
It's going to a period where these guys just kind of have to find their voice. So Kyle Mooney's getting an opportunity to do some weird sketches out there. And Beck Bennett is getting some time. I'm trying to think. A.D. Bryant has got a lot of work.
Yeah, she's got a lot more time.
And they're... you know, relying on Kate McKinnon a lot to carry that kind of Kristen Wiig.
A little too much.
Yeah, but
they're kind of overexposing her.
She's the only real star they got right now.
Yeah, which is another problem in wrestling, overexposing somebody.
Yeah, 100%. So I think, like, what SNL does really well is it lets people kind of find their voice, mm-hmm. and it lets that kind of work forward, and lets the people that are going to do the best work come forward at the end. You know, SNL, the years that didn't work in SNL are kind of those Ebersol years
mm-hmm.
where, you know, he goes like, wow, we're losing Eddie Murphy. So let's go out and get Billy Crystal and Martin Short and make a show out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, it's a flat show, you know? And the same thing can be said for wrestling. If you're losing a top guy, you can't just go out and grab a bunch of guys and, oh, fill it in.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it has to progress a little more naturally. The other thing that was really interesting was the 90s and on for SNL became more of a performer show. And so creatively, they talk about you stopped writing good ideas for the show of like, oh, I got this idea for this really weird sketch. And you start writing for characters. So instead of coming up with a new idea for a sketch that would be, you know, family at a dinner table or whatever, you wrote the cheerleader sketch that week. So you're writing for characters of like, oh, well, how does Pat respond to things? We got to write a Pat sketch instead of writing a fun sketch and then like creating a character like Pat.
Like getting a lot less of, say, like the Chopping Broccoli's.
Yeah.
And getting a lot more opera mans.
Exactly. So, yeah. Like, it changes in that kind of vein. And I was reading it, and I was like, it's so interesting with wrestling of, like, that's how you write in wrestling.
Mm.
So, like, if you're creating a story in wrestling, like, you start with the characters first.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it's harder creatively to do that because it limits you so much more. Like, you can't just kind of express yourself creatively in wrestling. So if you're writing a storyline, you have to, like, 100% start with the character first. So, like, if I'm writing a story for you, like, I have to start with the Reaper character first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I have to go through, like, what's that character's motivations or what is this or that. I can't just write a fun story for you
mm-hmm.
and go, like, oh, you know, let's do this cool thing with Matt.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, maybe that doesn't fit that character. And it's like, I think there's a, it creates, like, these barriers on it that makes you creatively, you have to do some more interesting stuff. But I think it sucks because you can't go out way out of the box in wrestling anymore because of that.
This is something interesting I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
Do you think in this day and age, especially, that when it comes to characters, there aren't enough defining lines?
Mm-hmm.
Like there are too many. We've reached a point where at one point all we wanted was wrestlers.
Yeah.
And now we have too many, quote-unquote, just wrestlers. Like, yeah. There aren't enough characters.
I was talking about this recently with someone. Was it you?
Probably.
About, like, how in the WWE today, everyone's just a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, the subject came up.
Well, yeah, I think it was you and I were talking about this recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, you get, like, Dean Ambrose. You go, what's Dean Ambrose? It's like, hey, he's a guy. He's a guy who wrestles, and he's kind of crazy. He's kind of erratic.
Yeah.
He's a guy. And you go, oh, what's Seth Rollins? Like, he's a guy. He's just the guy who beats up people.
Yeah.
And you go, like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, I'm trying. And so you start losing, like, defining characteristics.
Right. And I'm not even, before we get too far into it, I'm not even talking, like, characters.
No.
But just defining characteristics that really separate these
people.
Yeah,
like, what makes Seth Rollins Seth Rollins? What makes Dean Ambrose? And it's not, like, to me, sometimes it's costuming more than, like, character development.
Mm-hmm.
I would think about doing that, because, like, I remember I cut a promo, like, a test promo for something, and one of the criticisms was, like, my dress. I was like, well, what you're wearing doesn't fit the character. And it's like, that shouldn't matter. Like, I'm just wearing it because it's in the promo, because I didn't feel like changing.
Right.
Into it. It's costume,
mm-hmm.
you know? Does costuming help? Yes. If I go see Shakespeare and everyone's in jeans and t-shirts, it'll take me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a good enough actor, you can sell me Shakespeare no matter what. I don't know if you remember, or I ever talked about, back in the late 1930s, Orson Welles did a version of Macbeth that was all voodoo. was like one of the first like Shakespeare productions that was like trying to modernize it in a little way. He did it in New York, and it's one of the best American brought like productions of Shakespeare of any time. The costuming doesn't really matter. It's the characters. It's the story. You know, Hamlet is Hamlet is Hamlet. You know, if you do a modern version of Hamlet or if you do the older version of Hamlet, it's still Hamlet. You know, great examples are 10 Things I Hate About You, which is a, is that As You Like It? Can't remember. It's a Shakespeare that they turned on its head modern. Clueless, which is basically Jane Eyre. You know, it's a modernization of that, but it's done well. To me, you're starting with really, really great characters, and then from there, their motivations can come through. It doesn't matter what they're wearing, what they're doing. So when I look at Dean Ambrose, I get that he's erratic because he wears jeans and a wife beater, and he has messy hair.
Yeah.
But what I don't see from Dean Ambrose is, how is he erratic? Why is he erratic? What's the reasons behind it? Or any of that. He's just like, and he's not even that really erratic, or he's not that even that crazy. He's just like, what's the term I'm looking for? He's just kind of like, obtuse a little bit. Yeah. Like, he's not, like, he's got like quirks about him, but like, if Dean Ambrose worked in your office, you wouldn't be like, whoa, this guy can't work here.
Yeah.
He's just a guy. He's just kind of a little weird sometimes.
He's kind of got a...
He's got some idiosyncrasies, and that's it.
He's kind of got a Bill Murray quality to him.
Yeah.
Where he's just the weird guy.
But that's, like, I don't see, like, the Ambrose Asylum crazy. And they sell that type of stuff, and it's like, you know, a lot of it's just for catchphrases.
Yeah, or, like, I know. You gotta sell t-shirts.
But, like, watching Ring of Honor, I see a lot of times, too, of, like, Ring of Honor's just full of guys that wrestle, to me.
Aside from
like, the Briscoes have a defined thing.
Dalton Castle
has a defined thing.
Yeah.
Beer City Bruiser has a defined thing. You know, but a lot of guys, like, I'm sure LaRusso, if he listens to this, is going to poop
doesn't.
On me.
He doesn't.
But, like, I watched, today I was watching Jay White. Jay White's a phenomenal athlete and a great wrestler.
Yeah.
But if someone goes, like, Jay White, well, what's he? I go, he's a guy who wrestles. Like, it's just guys now.
Yep.
And so I think it creatively it's harder to tell stories if everyone's just a guy. Because, like, I need to know when I'm working or trying to create something, I need to know, like, why you're doing something. I think that's more important. I think guys should ask themselves that every single time. There's a couple things you should ask yourselves before you walk out for any segment. And that's segment, match, anything. First thing I think everyone should ask themselves before they walk out there is, what are we accomplishing? What's the reason that we're going out here? There's an accomplishment that needs to be had. If there's nothing to accomplish in this segment, don't go out there. Like, there's no reason to go out if you're not accomplishing something. So if the accomplishment is, you know, just to get the next set of story, to get this person more credibility, blah, 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 blah. There's a million things you can accomplish with any segment. That's the first question is, what are we accomplishing? Okay. The next thing I think people need to ask is, you know, why is my character doing this? Because if you don't understand why your character's doing it, they shouldn't be doing it. And this comes back to a lot of slapdash booking, where it's not even booking, it's matchmaking of like, oh, those guys will do fine together. Those guys will have a fine match, just put them together. Well, why? What's it accomplishing? What are we doing with it? What's next? Why are they wrestling? And if it's just because you think it's going to be a good match, okay, well then tell everyone, because that's the story we're going to tell. Of like, hey, by the way, these are two guys, they've never wrestled before, it's a matchmaking thing, you know, check out this spectacle. But there's still something to be accomplished out of it, you know? So I'm going to use random people again. Like, we'll use you and Lee Moriarty as an example.
Sure.
Because I like both you guys. And you guys haven't wrestled much, I think, what, one match?
One match.
Last year, yeah. So if someone's, like, doing that, and they go, oh, it's a spectacle. Like, these guys, check it out. These guys have only wrestled one time before. Throw it on a show randomly, okay? Well, you beating him or him beating you, what's it accomplish? Okay? And it's, like, it needs to accomplish something, because why are you on the show if it's not accomplishing something?
Yeah.
So whoever wins that match has to go on to something else, because we just had a spectacle, and it has to now do something because of it. You know? Lesnar and Taker's a great example of, like, when they had their, or not Lesnar and Taker, Lesnar Goldberg, I wanted to say. It's a really great example of that, of, okay, here's a spectacle. You know, the first time they wrestled, it's a spectacle. You know, they've never seen it before. And Goldberg goes over in, what, like 30 seconds or something in that first match?
Yep.
Okay. Well, what did it accomplish? Well, okay, we set Goldberg off on a path. Mm-hmm. Okay, he is still now a dominant athlete. He beat the most dominant guy we've ever had in the last decade in that company. Mm-hmm. Goldberg just beat him in 30 seconds. He set up something. And then, like, now, like, with hindsight, God, you can go back and look at that feud and how great it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think Goldberg and Lesnar is the best story that's been told in the WWE in, I may go back 5 years.
5 years?
It's really good. So they had him go over, and then they did the second match where he went over clean again on Lesnar.
Yeah.
Then they did the Royal Rumble spot where he just eliminated Lesnar real quick.
Was it the second match after the Rumble?
Was it? I'd have to go back and look. I can't remember.
I can't. Did they? Wait. Yeah.
Then Goldberg wins the title.
I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
No, because then Goldberg wins the title right after the Rumble. I think they did two matches before, and then the Rumble spot, then Goldberg wins the title right after the Rumble, and then they go into Mania.
Did they wrestle a second time?
Maybe they didn't.
I think it was Survivor Series. He eliminates Lesnar from the Rumble.
There it is. Okay.
Then he wins the title. Yeah.
There it is. So, okay. Going back. You edit all the stuff where I was wrong.
Sure.
So, yeah. So, anyway. Back to that. So, when you get to Mania, okay?
Yeah.
You have seen Brock Lesnar beat people really quick. You've seen Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar in under 30 seconds. You saw Goldberg beat Owens very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Goldberg just run over people since he's got here.
Yeah.
He's beaten everyone super quick. So you walk into that WrestleMania match, there is not a person, I don't care who you are, there is not a person who walked, when that match went in, goes, well, I know how this is ending. Mm. Nobody knew. Nobody knew how that match was ending. No one knew how long they were going to wrestle. No one knew who was going over. No one knew anything on this. Because it could be anything.
Yeah.
So right immediately, you're on the edge of your seat for this match. Okay? And I think, like, if I remember correctly, like, in the first 30 seconds, as Goldberg goes for the spear, Lesnar, like, leapfrogs him, germs him three times, and Goldberg just gets right back up and spears him.
It was a video game match.
Yeah.
That's what it needed to be.
So he hits that spear, and immediately, in the back of your brain, go, it could be over. Because we just saw it. Right. We just saw the... And they did it Survivor Series in the main event. Mm-hmm. You think they were afraid to do it WrestleMania in the mid-card?
Right. Because
it wasn't like...
It wasn't main.
It wasn't main because Roman and fucking Taker was. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, they could do this. They could just do this again. He hits the fucking... like, they beat the shit out of each other for a little bit. And then, obviously, like, Lesnar goes over.
Yeah.
But the entire time, you're sitting there going, like... It's like a fucking Tyson match. Mm. We've never had that in wrestling. It completely warped the formula because for me now, and I'll use tag wrestling as an example, when I watch tag wrestling, I get the formula. Okay? Do I really need to pay attention until the hot tag? I mean, not really. Yeah. If I'm watching on TV, if I'm watching Raw, I don't really need to watch until the hot tag. Mm. You know and I know, we'll reveal a little, like, inside baseball here.
Sure.
When you're at a show and you're up next, okay, and you're talking to your opponent or whatever, and that match before you is going on, and you'll peek out at the monitor or out the curtain or something,
yeah.
And you've said it before, and I know you said it. You looked out and go, ah, they're still in the heat. We got time.
Yeah.
Because you know the formula. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how this match is going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in the crowd does, too.
Yeah.
They know how the match is going to play out. So when you see Lesnar and Taker completely break that formula, it's one of the most creative things I've ever seen. I was so mesmerized by that story, and I haven't really watched a lot of WWE since because it's like it broke the mold completely.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you take that and make it more and more and more, but it's the first time I can remember as someone who's an inside baseball guy who gets how matches work, who understands the booking of it, and goes like, okay, well, this is why you got to put this guy over. And it's one of the first times since I was like a true fan of professional wrestling that I went, oh, I have no idea how this match is going to go, how long it's going to go, who wins, where they're going in the future, anything. And I could watch it.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant for this era and an internet era. No. We got way off topic on that.
No. That was...
Welcome to Podcasting with Marcus Mann, where we try to talk about something and then we just go off on a tangent about weird stuff.
Since I have a minute to speak, I'm going to take a break.
Go ahead.
So, I'm going to take a break to sell you a t-shirt, and we'll be right back with Marcus Mann.
ProWrestlingTees.com/Matt Connard. Head over now, where we have 7 spooky designs for you to choose from. Personally, I can't choose one in particular, so I highly recommend you just buy all of them. Buy all my shirts. Buy all my shirts. ProWrestlingTees.com/Matt Connard.
And we're back with Marcus Mann. We were talking about this earlier when I first showed up.
Oh. Did we talk for like 3 hours before you actually
started
this?
Yeah, I know. It was like before we even turned the mics on. Today is far different than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When a guy gets a little buzz now, when he gets signed, 9 times out of 10 he's coming in as who he was. Because the wrestling world's different now.
Yeah.
It's not so isolated where if you bring a cherry pick a guy, bring him in, you can mold him and shape him, and a majority of the world will be none the wiser.
Correct.
Today, with the internet and streaming and all this, every wrestling company's got the capability to put their product out there on the web, so people are far more aware when a guy's got buzz. You sign that guy, you bring him in, just it's began with Joe, began with AJ.
Yeah.
Now it's like we can pull more people in by keeping this guy
who he is
and bring all that buzz and that fanfare with him. Do you think though, and this came up while you were speaking earlier because I had a lot of time to think. Do you think to a certain point, depending who the guy is, that can start to become a detriment, not only to the company, but to the guys, because some guys need a little bit more character. Like some of those wrestlers that come in, they still got their skills, but this is a character-based company. This is a story-based company.
Yeah, and they've had successes and failures in both ways.
They have.
So, like, I mean, you could look at, and I don't want to call him a failure because he makes more money than me.
Yeah.
But you could look at Fandango as a good example of a guy who had a lot of buzz coming in off the indies. And then they give him this gimmick, and it just falls flat, and it's kind of spoiled him in a way. That's kind of sad, because he's really, really good.
Yeah.
I
mean, Aries is a good example.
Yeah.
He's the most recent, I guess you would say failure? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was his decision to leave, and he had some injury issues as well.
Right.
But Aries lacked that creative buzz, because he was just Austin Aries again. And it's just kind of like we've seen this already kind of feel, where like a guy like Bobby Roode has kind of turned what he used to do on his head a little bit and created a different character for himself. I'm curious to see, because I haven't watched a lot of NXT recently and I need to do that. But I think the successful people that they've done is, I think Eric Young's been very successful with the whole Sanity thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been able to adjust that.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't got to see a lot of Kyle O'Reilly down at NXT.
Well, he just, like, yeah. I don't even know if his episode's aired yet or not.
I haven't seen him do anything. But I'm curious to see a guy like him, like, well, what's different?
Mm.
Like, what's different, like, with Kyle O'Reilly in NXT than it was in Ring of Honor? Mm. Like, and he was always a guy that, like, when you see Kyle O'Reilly, it was just kind of like, oh, he's a dude who hits people, like, with a lot of moves. Like, he does a lot of things, and they're cool. And it's like, well, how does doing cool moves get you to WrestleMania? I think that's what I'm kind of thinking of, like, AJ Styles went straight to the main roster because AJ had a definitive character of who he was, this phenomenal one character.
Mm-hmm.
This, guy who traveled the world and was a superstar everywhere he went, and for some reason this company never asked him and why, and this chip on his shoulder because of it. He comes in and he takes on John Cena. Like, they build that very, very well, what they did. So more and more what I'm seeing, like, I don't think, like, I think gimmicks that they have down there play better when they're more, I don't want to say gimmicky, but, like, I think Ruby Riott plays really well. Mm-hmm. I think she's very, very different, and she's found her niche. Like, I think No Way Jose plays better. I think the Sandy stuff plays really good. I don't know if it's going to work out. I don't even know what's the Heavy Machinery, that tag team. Like, it's a little gimmicky. Just two big dudes.
Yeah.
It might play out.
Yeah.
The other two guys, with Paul Erling. I can't remember their names.
The
you know what I'm talking
something
about.
Something of
Pain. Yeah, the Authors of Pain.
Authors of Pain.
Gimmicky, you know?
Yeah.
There is... Wrestling figured out with Mick Foley a really big lesson, okay? So... Dusty Rhodes was always a guy... I'm just saying names now. So Dusty Rhodes was always like the kind of working class guy that you could identify with. Mm-hmm. And they never had another Dusty Rhodes ever yet.
Yeah.
Like, it was just... He's Dusty Rhodes. So then when Foley comes along, he does the Mankind character and stuff like that. Like, Foley really changes the game when we start learning about his past and who he was and how much of a fan he was and how this was kind of his dream. And, like... Foley kind of became that generation's Dusty in a way. That we really connected with him in a way because he was us. So, like, well, Dusty was this common man wrestling, you know, the Ric Flairs of the world who rich, and you sat in the crowd and you kind of tried to identify with that. You know, Steve Austin was kind of like the working man, you know, kind of guy that fought his boss. Mm-hmm. But that was all kind of story. Foley was the first guy I can remember that was like, I was you. I was in the crowd. I wanted to do this. I was you.
Mm-hmm.
And people latched onto that in an amazing way. So then, like, flash forward how many years now? Like, 20-some-odd years.
Right.
I remember seeing QT Marshall talk about this. Because QT is one of those guys that, like, is just so passionate about wrestling. He absolutely just loves it. And this is all he wants to do. And he's really driven to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, the problem is, like, how many of those guys are out there? How many guys are out there on the independent scenes today that are like, you know, I've just been a fan my whole life. It's always been my dream. This is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. There's a billion of those guys. Well, how many of those guys can they sign?
Wow.
There you go. At that point, like, when he was doing this, like, was talking about, was like, there I have, like, the Daniel Bryans and those types of guys, you know, that are, like, lifelong passionate, this is what they wanted to do type of guys. And it's like, so... You know, there's not a lot of room on the roster for the same character, which is, like, I love wrestling.
Yeah.
And so I see a lot of, like, what wrestlers are, and it's like, well, you got to sell me, like, more than you just like wrestling. Like, that can't just be enough anymore. Because, mm-hmm. like, also, every guy on the main roster loves wrestling. They're there because they love wrestling, you know? So, like, Bayley has kind of got that mold right now, where Bayley's kind of that, like... I wanted to do this and fought through it. Now I'm here, and isn't that great? Like, one of you type of thing. She does a really, really great job with it.
Yeah.
But I can't, like, obviously we haven't got to the Mae Young Classic to see any of those girls.
No.
But if that's any of their gimmicks, like, we already got Bayley. We can't have another one of you.
Yeah, we don't.
It just,
don't.
It doesn't work.
We've already got one.
So, to me, you know, you need that ability to connect with people in a certain way. Edge found a way to do it with, like, his kind of fandom, him and Christian, and stuff like that. But to me, you got to start defining the characters a little more. And when I say characters, I don't mean gimmicks. And I want to make that clear. Because a character isn't, I'm a dumpster, you know, guy. Or
right,
I'm a clown,
I'm a repo man.
Or a repo man. Those aren't characters. Those are gimmicks.
Yeah.
Characters is so much of... TV people on TV are characters. If you watch a TV show, like Jon Snow is a character, you know, what he is a character. So I'll use him as a really good example because I love Game of Thrones right now and it's very popular. How much time do I got? Here we go. So Jon Snow as a character is he's a bastard son of a lord, one of the most important lords in the land. So he never fits in with his family. He never fits in properly because he's not a real son.
Mm-hmm.
And in a world where heredity is the most important thing, he's not a real son. Even though his father treats him that way, he always has this in the back of his head. And so from those early years, Jon Snow's journey is borne out in front of us. Because he will inherit no land, because he won't marry anyone important, because mm-hmm. he's a bastard. he decides to do what a lot of sons would do in that situation is he goes off and joins, you know, their version of the military in the Night's Watch. And so when you see Jon Snow now, which is like we're way into the show, we're six seasons in, and he's making his decisions, every decision that he's made in his life is formed by this important moment in his young life, which is he's never truly accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything he does, every moment that he's unsure of himself, is because he wasn't accepted. This is a character. This is what you build. And so for me, with wrestling, is if you come out and you go, like, I do this. I'm a dumpster guy. That's not a character, mm-hmm. you know? You can be a regular guy, but how are you different than everyone else in that sense of what drives you? Why are you here? Why are you doing it? Why are you making the decisions you're making? If you're a bad guy in wrestling, why? Not just be a bad guy. There's a reason why you're underhand. People aren't just naturally shitty people.
Right.
You know? I realize, like, in everyday life, there's some people that, like, if someone does something shitty to you, if someone cuts you off in traffic and does a shitty thing to you, it's not because they're a shitty person. There was a reason to cut you off in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They were pissed off about something, or they're taking something out on you because something happened. That's what being a heel is, you know, when you build that character of, like, okay, well, then you run out and you attack your best friend and former tag team partner. Why? What drove you to that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the reason that we're breaking up this tag team right now? You know, if you're going to break up a tag team, it can't just be, like, to me, it just can't be like, oh, you know, I accidentally hit him. You know, there's got to be more to that,
right.
You know? Because you go back, you go like, okay, they've been a tag team for 7 years, let's say, okay? One of those tag teams. And it's like, oh, and then we do like a couple accidental run-in stuff, and you think you hit, and then it all breaks down. But it's like, you had 7 years of history.
Mm-hmm.
You ever friends for someone for 7 years, and then they accidentally do something, and you go, no, I'm going to fucking beat the shit out of you. Like, that doesn't happen.
All right.
It needs to have better motivations and better and it starts with, to me, bookers and creative people can't give wrestlers good stories until the wrestler understands his character. And unless the wrestler understands who they are and why they do things or what their motivations are and what they do, then I can't give you, or any booker can't give you, a good story. Like, I can't sit down and work creative with people. I was doing it this weekend, like, working down with, I don't want to say their names because the stuff hasn't aired yet.
Right.
I don't want to ruin that type of stuff.
Right.
But I was talking to some guys, and I was like, you guys have gone through these journeys, and, like, you either need to, what's happened between you guys either needs to bring you together in a certain way, or it needs to tear you apart, because that's the only way these journeys happen. And so they're on this kind of path, and it's like, so there's your two options. And there's not just one option, but you guys got to figure out how it tears you apart or how it brings you together, and have those conversations and really understand your motivations on it. And I don't know a lot of people that are saying that to guys. And I'm not trying to put myself over in that sort of thing. But, like, it seems common knowledge to me. If you read a book or you watch a TV show or something, you go, like, I mean, I know people watch TV and they'll go, like, ah, he's doing that because, you know, two seasons ago when this happened, you know, he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people know in Star Wars, one of my favorite scenes is, like, when Han puts himself on the back of the Star Destroyer and then floats away with the garbage. And then Boba Fett follows him off to Cloud City,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then Lucas and the prequels put in where Obi-Wan's running from Jango Fett, and he hangs on the side of an asteroid and hides himself and then floats away. And so young Boba's in the ship, and he sees that tactic. And so later on, when Han does it, he understands that tactic, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a build-up to that. We get that in movies. Like, you got to do the same thing as your character. Like, you got to start building that kind of, like, knowledge base of, like, you know, and that comes into, like, how you wrestle a match, you know. So if you come in, if you're a babyface and every single match I see you, the guy's working your knee, like, you should have a better strategy for preventing guys from working your knee.
Right.
You know, and to me, it's so much, and I was talking to Jake Garrett about this last night. I love watching heels, because I think heels are the most manipulative. I love watching the kind of gears work in a heel mid-match,
mm-hmm.
of like, okay, this plan's not working. How do I change it? How do I get back to it? How do we do this? How do we move around? Because he studied me and I studied him, and now he knows what I'm doing. Like, that to me is the most fun of wrestling. And I'd rather watch stuff like that. But you got to, like, guys got to know who they are to be able to do things like that.
Mm.
I don't know, what was that, 15 minutes of just random bullshit?
Yeah, it's about, yeah, it's around.
I feel like every time I say something, I have to, like, get a confirmation and be like, does that make any sense?
No, it makes, yes, it makes sense. It makes sense.
You know, it all comes from, and I said this on the last podcast, I think I said it on Ben's podcast when I did too, and I'm not some sort of, like, genius in this type of, and I don't want to say that. Guys don't read enough material.
Mm.
They don't read enough books. They don't watch enough movies. They don't do any of that and put it in the same context. Mm. They just don't. And you are in an entertainment business, first and foremost. You are in a theater business. Understand that the way you're going to make the most money is by entertaining people and telling the stories. So just learn how stories are formed and learn the story structure. Mm-hmm. And guys don't do that. Especially, like, I talk to, like, young wrestlers or trainees, and I'll say things like, the first thing I ask when we're building a character, I'll say things like, what's your favorite movie? Or what's your favorite book? Or things like that. I'll ask things like that because that's going to help you build a story structure. I said it on Ben's podcast. If you come to wrestling and I ask you, like, what's the reason you got into wrestling or most of that? And people go, like, well, I want to be, like, I really like Bret Hart, so I want to wrestle like Bret Hart. It's like, they already have Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want to learn how to cut promos, so I'm going to watch Jake the Snake Roberts. That's really good if you want to cut Jake the Snake Roberts promos.
Mm-hmm.
Be you.
Yeah.
Find out how to be you. Take influences from everything. The most successful wrestlers, Steve Austin will tell you about listening to music on the car rides. Edge will talk about, like, I listened to these songs and they gave me ideas for this. Mm-hmm. Jericho's another guy who, like, Jericho's been one of the most successful professional wrestlers because he's stolen from everything, from movies, from TV, from all of that.
Yeah.
He's so successful in that. And to me, that type of pop culture stuff or those types of basic story stuff, it's going to make you way more successful than just doing what Bret Hart did. Even Bret Hart was doing stuff that was, you know, different and unique. Shawn Michaels was playing off, you know, that kind of celebrity, you know, not effeminate guy, but, like, he wasn't doing the same thing Buddy Rogers was doing. You know, he modernized it. He mm-hmm. made it his. And that, like, Flair modernized it. And Shawn modernized it after Flair and so on and so forth. You got to keep finding that way to do it and making it, like, why is it you? How do we do this? My advice to anyone is just read a fucking book. I'm in it right now because I'm trying to rebuild my character. So I think that's why this is all kind of
fun. Yeah. Yeah. You're in a, I know completely what you mean. I'm gonna.
Are you getting pop-ups over there?
No, it's looking for Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay, that's why.
And I just don't bother connecting to yours.
I'm like, are you getting pop-ups over there? I'm like, what's going on?
No, I get that. I'm in a kind of a retooling phase myself, and you kind of have to be. You have to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Of that sort, you've got to be aware when. All right, maybe this. I'll say form. This form of me mm-hmm. has run its course. I need to evolve.
Yeah.
You constantly, even if you're in the middle of a run, you need to constantly be aware of yourself and be aware when it's time to change and be prepared to do so.
Yeah. Well, and you have to be ahead of it.
Yeah.
You have to be ahead of it. I remember a couple times I've turned to people and went, you got to turn him heel in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, oh, but he's super over. And I go, yeah. And they go, wow, I think the crowd's not going to turn on him for another, like, you know, 6 months. And it's like, that's why you turn him heel in 4.
Mm.
Like, because you can start reading a crowd that you go, like, they're starting to turn on him. Or they're starting to cheer a little more. And so it's like, okay, you got to get ahead of that, though. You can't do that. So, like, you got to constantly evolve and you got to do that. So, as a character, if you're walking out and things are starting to feel flat, you're already behind. Like, you need to constantly be retooling and going back. I constantly think to myself, like, how do we change this? How do we make it better? And then I got to a point where I felt like I was becoming a caricature of myself and mm-hmm. I wasn't actually being, like, a character. And I was like, I need to completely retool the whole thing.
Yep.
And nothing's harder in wrestling, and few guys are willing to do it, than going back to scratch It sucks.
It does.
It sucks really, really hard. I had a really good conversation with LaRusso because Chris had to do it.
Yep.
And, like, it really sucks. It's really hard to do. But sometimes you just have to. Sometimes you're like, okay, what I'm doing isn't going to get me what I want to do. So I got to completely retool this whole thing.
And you really, you have to commit to that. You can't get cold feet.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, and we talked about this earlier, and I think, so let's, and we're going to go back to our original topic because I like that.
Yeah.
Lot of great comedians, especially on Saturday Live and stand-ups to a certain extent, they will tell you that the thing that really helped them more than anything else is improv. Improv theater is one of the things that makes people really successful in any sort of entertainment field, because improv is such a different set of skills. So when people think improv, they definitely think of, you know, just like, oh, you just make things up on the spot. Isn't that easy? It's, or, you know, not easy, but like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But improv has certain rules and certain structures, and there's some of them for a reason. And one of the big ones is, and I think we've talked about this before, is yes and. So a big rule in improv is you never shut anyone down. So if we're doing an improv scene and we're doing a thing, we're like, we're guests at a thing, and you come in and you go, I go, what do you do for a living? And you're like, oh, I'm an astronaut. And I go, wow, that's weird because you're wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
I've now shut the scene down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it just doesn't work. You have to constantly be willing to take whatever someone's giving you and just keep working with it. Wrestling to me, promos and everything, that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Never shut anyone down. Continue to work through it. The other one is, I used to do improv back in college down in Pitt. And they ran Friday Night Improvs. I don't know if they still did. They did for years. And we're talking like almost, I think like 20 years they've been running Friday Night Improvs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all student-based, and anyone can go in. You pay $1 to get in, and anyone from the audience can get up and just perform improv.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And their rules was, one of the big rules for any show was, the first rule always was, failure is okay. And because you're not always going to succeed, but you're going to learn from it. And improv is like that. Just every scene doesn't work. It's live. It's happening that. And I feel in wrestling, we don't make failure okay.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when guys are trying to work out a gimmick or trying to retool something. There's this willingness that we put them out there for a show, and you go like, all right, well, you know, it's the start. Let's see what we can do. And you put that out for show two, and it's just not 100% there. And then you put it over show three, and if it's not 100% there, they go, we're done. We're moving on. And it's, so many guys need to find their footing. So you find that character and really, really tool it live and see it, because it's different. I can sit here with a piece of paper and tool everything, but it's different when you're out there. Mm-hmm. Failure's got to be okay, because you got to keep, you got to keep letting guys push harder to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I think every professional wrestler should be, should try improv theater at least once in their life. It's exhilarating.
Yeah.
It's fun. I love doing it when I was younger. I haven't done it in a long time. Like, wrestling's kind of given me that a little bit back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great training tool. The, for anyone who gives a shit what I say, read a book. If you want to do wrestling, read books. Do improv theater. I think every professional wrestler should take a ballet class. And learn how to control their bodies and learn body movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should take acting classes if you can, or read acting theory and books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of this stuff is like, you can find local improv troupes that you can join in or watch or do audience volunteer shows. You want to read some acting theory, you got a local library, you can find it. I mean, this isn't all, like, expensive stuff, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
If you can take an acting class, great. They're really helpful. Mm-hmm. I took a bunch of them. They're really, really helpful. And, like, all the stuff that I'm saying about how to build a character, that all comes from just taking acting classes and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I used to do Shakespeare, and Shakespeare's that way of, like, okay, this is the character, and how do you build it, and how do you do it, and this mm-hmm. is what they're saying, because you don't understand a goddamn word of it. And you understand what you're actually saying and what it means and stuff like that. And you have to go through that translation and through that process and right. how you say it. And that's the only reason that I have any sort of clue on anything is because it's just, and we've talked about before. I mean, I have, God, I started when I was 14 doing acting.
Mm.
So I have almost 20 years of some sort of theater experience or acting experience.
Yeah.
So I used to run workshops and do theater projects and all that type of stuff. you know, when I got, like, people when I got into wrestling were like, oh, you picked it up really fast. It was like, yeah, I had, like, way more experience than you realize. Yeah. Like, because I had theater background. Like, that is to me. So if you're, you know, if you're, do you think kids are listening to this? Like, 16-year-old kids who want to get into wrestling?
No.
Okay. But if you are a 16-year-old kid who wants to get into wrestling,
yeah,
take a high school drama class. That's the best thing that'll ever happen to you. Take a high school drama class.
And also, if you're 16 and are just around, I'm going to take a second to beg you to follow me on Twitter, and we'll be right back with Marcus Mann.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Wrestling Death. You can follow me at Reaper Matt C, and you can follow my guest at Marcus Mann BHS. And while we're plugging stuff, I recommend you go and follow Rise Wrestling over at Rise_Wrestling, Facebook, Instagram. Follow them, like them on all the things. It's up and coming company here in the Pittsburgh area that you should keep an eye on for sure. All right, now back to the show.
And we're back with Marcus Mann. We're talking during the break.
We have real breaks too.
We do have real
breaks. It's not just 30 seconds where then we come back.
No, we have breaks where we in real jeopardy of just talking for another hour and not coming back.
I will say this, since you've changed the format and we've had the breaks, this is my second time doing it.
Yeah.
I realize now that it's much needed with someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you didn't have the breaks,
yeah,
like we would still be on some weird tangent.
Yeah.
And wouldn't be like keeping it constrained
to
a time limit. Because like, the first one I did with you, which is no longer available.
No.
Vintage collection.
So you're fine.
What did I go, like 2 hours and 15 minutes?
You went 3 hours.
Did I go three?
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
You went 3 hours.
And we barely knew each other.
Yeah, this is when we were just getting acquainted.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Dave was in the corner sulking.
I went really long on that.
Yeah. So. We went till like 3:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You were drunk.
I do my best work.
Anyway. Yeah, during the break we were talking about how I wanted to talk about how young guys
mm-hmm.
have to be willing to fail
yeah.
to succeed. You yeah. can't be going out there worried about every little detail. You have to be willing to fall on your face to get any better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And that's like both a character standpoint and a wrestling standpoint, you know? So, you gotta be like, I used to tell people this, like, if you're passionate about an idea, your passion, whether or not that idea is good or not,
yeah,
your passion will usually sell it to a crowd. And so if you're really, really passionate about it, and you really think it's going to get over, and you really think it's going to work, you should do it. You should just do it. And if people tell you that it's not going to work, and you're wrong, you should do it anyway. And then when it works, it was your passion that did it, and understand that. But if it fails, be ready to come back and go, it didn't work. You guys were right. I was wrong. I will listen to you guys. I will listen to that advice because for some reason I didn't take it.
Yeah.
You know. But it's okay to do that. It's okay to, like, I think a really good example is you and I and Peyton had that idea for the bull rope match. The famous Hangman's Noose match.
Oof.
So, I had come up with the idea. I think Dave and I came up with the idea about a bull rope match or something like that.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
you don't see them a lot. And
right.
Like, and I think the story was heading in a way of like, because I think, you know, Peyton had been ducking you and
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And we were doing a lot of stuff. I'm like, this kind of makes sense to do like a bull rope match.
Mm.
And so, but a bull rope match kind of has a certain, or a strap match has a certain kind of like connotation. So we're like, well, how can we make it better? So we're like, what if we did it? Because you used to wear the Hangman's noose,
yeah.
Which you don't do anymore.
No.
For whatever reason.
Because there's a guy named Hangman Page walking around.
There you go. So we thought it'd be cool. Like, we'll put the noose in the middle, and you could use the noose as a weapon, and it'd be, like, kind of a thing. And it was like, oh, it's kind of a cool thing. And so we go out there. One, the finish was good, because I came up with the finish.
Yeah.
Which was, I'd never seen any of those matches I've seen just guys hit the corners and it was over.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, a funny, I thought a good way to do it is like, have you get the three corners and then the fourth corner, I would drape my body over it.
Yeah.
So you literally couldn't touch the fourth corner. Like, you would hit my back, but it wasn't touching the corner.
Right.
And so, like, technically, you wouldn't win the match.
Because I couldn't get to it.
And it would be a way to distract everything and pull around, and I thought it was a cool idea. Mm-hmm. So that worked. But, like, so we come up with this idea. We pitch it to management. They go, all right, you know, go for
sure.
it. Like, why not? Yeah. Go for it. We go out there and do it, and it falls flat. Like, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting there going, like, man, that's weird. And it could have been just for the personalities at the time, and you and Peyton hadn't really worked together much, and, like, where he was at in the company at the time, that just, like, his head really wasn't there, and, he, like, it just, there was a lot of stuff going on that we were like, all right, well, it fell flat, and it didn't work. And it was really supposed to, like, build a lot of people, like, both of you guys off of it, and it just, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. It fell flat. I'm like, all right, well, that didn't work, and that's fine. So then I remember, like, coming back to it, like, what was it, a year later, like, you and Ty Cross were going to do it.
Yeah, I brought it back for the, like, blow-off Ty and I.
Yeah, okay, it's a big blow-off, it's a final big blow-off. You and Ty had wrestled a bunch of times.
Yeah,
and so we needed something, and so we brought it back. We're like, all right. I remember the first time you didn't really use the noose at all. Like, no one used the noose in the match.
Yeah, that was one of the big, like, learning, the big lessons from that. We didn't touch the noose.
Yeah.
It's, like, a Hangman's noose match. You didn't touch the noose.
Yeah, so we built this whole thing of a Hangman's noose match, and you didn't do it.
Yeah.
All right. So then we do the second match, which literally I've never watched that match.
I haven't either.
Because I get kicked in the, like, the first 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I'm gone.
Yeah. I stole that idea from Taker Sean Ground Zero.
Yes.
Which, fuck. That match.
It was great. And so that moment worked. So I go backstage and I start drinking. And we didn't have a monitor.
Right. That's...
So, at that show. So, I never watched the match. And then, I don't think we... Was there a tape of it anywhere?
I hope not.
It might be on one of those random DVDs Jake gave me. Because he used to give me, like, every show on a DVD.
Yeah.
It's probably around my house somewhere. Because I have, like... My girlfriend would be like, why do you have all of these DVDs you never watch? I'm like, I don't know. They're shows.
They're all in my bag.
Yeah.
Like, just scrambled around.
I have a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So, I never watched it again. But I remember... Ty got concussed in that match?
Yeah. The guy... I'm trying to remember. I think I drop kicked him, man. And he bumped on my knee. And
that's right.
Knocked himself. Yeah. Like.
But I remember you coming back from that match and going, like, "Oh, it didn't work."
No.
Like, it just didn't work.
It didn't.
And so we sat there and, like, there's a weird thing in, like, sometimes in creatively, like, you have to be willing to admit this, and I'm very, very hard with this. Where, like, I remember us sitting there and I just kept going, like. But it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good idea. Mm. And now we have two instances where it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two lab shop experiences. It did not work. This match just didn't work. The crowd didn't buy into it. It's a weird match. It just doesn't make any goddamn sense. But in my brain, even as I'm talking about it, I'm still going, like, yeah, but it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Flat out. So now we come back to it and you go, like, okay, well, it didn't work. We move on. So we just don't do that match anymore. It's just not an idea that we ever bring up. It's just, it was a failed thing that we did. And that's 100% fine. You learn from those types of moments where we built this entire thing. We built this entire concept. If no one had ever seen your two Hangman's Noose matches and I pitched them the idea tomorrow about this match, they're going to go, like, yeah, it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have that experience to know. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's just a fail. It's a failed prospect. It's a failed thing. And you have to cut it and move on. I think I've talked about this before. Guys also need to understand this. When we're talking about building characters and retooling.
Yeah.
This is important. There is something called the sunk cost fallacy, which is when you put a lot of time and energy and money into something. I use this in a promo, actually. It was a really good promo. I mean, it's me. When you put a lot of time, energy, money into something, okay, and it's not working, a lot of times what will happen when people go, like, well, here's the deal, okay? We've put so much time and money and energy and all the stuff in this, and it's not working, but we've put so much of the stuff, we got to make this work. We have to. We've put so much effort into this. Mm-hmm. So much effort into this. We got to make this work. And it's a fallacy. Because it doesn't matter how much time and energy and money you spent on something. If it's not working, it's not working. So you've sunk all this cost into this thing, and you're just going to sink more time and more money and more energy in something that's not working.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, You got to look at yourself and go, it's not working. We have to stop. You got to have that cutoff moment. Mm-hmm. And so where that moment is defined by so many different things. But you have to be willing to at some point go, this is not working and we're done with it. The hangman's noose, to me, is my big sunk cost. Because we put so much time and so much energy, and even today I look and I go, like, I could make that work. I could retool that. I could make that work. Mm-hmm. But you got, at this point, we had, like, at some point, we had to cut it off and go, like, this thing didn't work. We're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I had the colored powder thing I was trying to get over.
Mm-hmm.
Another example. Zach Vincent worked his ass off to try and get that thing over. Mm-hmm. It didn't get over. You had mentioned it to me in passing, and I talked to Zach about it, and he's like, go for it. Like, make it all you. It didn't work for me. Like, yeah. I couldn't get that goddamn thing over.
Yeah.
And I was talking recently to Christian Black, and he was like, well, I kind of got this idea. I'm like, you can go for it. Like, if you want to try it, go for it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm willing to give it to anyone at this point because I'm like, it's just not going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like, at some point you go, like, as much as you want to get it over, as much as what you got to do, just cut the cord and move on.
Yeah.
And you've got to be willing to take those chances and fail, but you also have to be willing to go, like, okay, it's over. It's mm-hmm. over. We failed, and we just got to move on, and you got to find the right thing.
Yeah.
Guys got to be willing to admit that. And to promoters and bookers out there, they also need to let those breathe. Nothing's worse for a guy than coming up with an idea and getting about, like, 10% in and being told it's not working and move on.
Right. Because
they never really feel that they failed, you know? And that's, like, you know, you hear so many guys in locker rooms of, like, you know, I had this thing and they didn't push me and they cut my legs out from underneath me and I never really had a chance to show. And you hear the ideas that they're talking about, and you go, like, well, those weren't going to work. Like,
yeah.
It just, you know that's not going to work. But you hear the guy being like, well, I just never got a chance. And they're right. They didn't get a chance to fail. You got to let guys fail. And guys got to be willing to fail. Because then when they come back and they go, and you go, like, there's the thing, dude. We gave you every opportunity to get this thing over, and it didn't work. It's over.
Yeah.
It's all, like, you didn't get it over. It's on you at this point. We didn't cut your legs out. We let you fail on it. Because, like, they're going to take that and learn, okay, well, now I know why this idea was bad and why it didn't work, and now I can get better at it. We got better because of the Hangman's Noose match. I think we understand stipulations a lot better and how to work around them and what we can do and how you can structure those types of matches.
Right.
Significantly better than if we would have just never done it. Like, if we would have just done, like, a Caribbean strap match, which makes no goddamn sense.
No.
We would have understood how to have a Caribbean strap match, and the match would have been fine, but I think you and I creatively are better today for having that failure on our record, because, and we still joke about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's still text messages about, like, why don't you do a Hangman's Noose match or something?
Yeah.
Like, you want to really kill the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that. Like, yeah. We'll joke about it because it's a failure, and you can joke about it, and you can move on, and it's just, guys gotta be willing to go out there and take an 0 for 4 and strike out 3 times, because you're really going to be able to recognize, you know, what's coming next. I love baseball analogies.
Right.
You know, if you're swinging out on a curveball every single time and you can't hit that curveball, that's great. Do you understand why you're not hitting the curveball, and can you recognize a good one and a bad one and be able to hit it next time?
Right.
That's all that is. And I think guys, especially young guys, so afraid of failure.
Mm-hmm.
They're so scared. They're so scared that they're gonna have one failure and then they're not gonna be on shows for like 6 months and then they're done.
Yeah.
And they gotta go work somewhere else, or they're so scared.
Mm-hmm.
It's palpable sometimes. And, like, because I was talking to Jock Sampson about it, and Jock's like, Jock's not scared of anything.
No.
And Jock's like, I'll just go somewhere else. Like, and I go, yeah, but you've been doing this for how long? You right. know that you can go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know that you've succeeded so many times and failed so many times that you know that. A kid who's a year in doesn't know that.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. Like, he thinks if he fails and he's not on the shows for his home promotion, that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
He's done. Like, just pack it in. Don't go to shows anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... Promotions need to believe in their guys and they need to know that they have that base to be able to do it. But guys, you got to be willing to take a chance. You've got to be willing to fail.
Yeah.
You're only going to succeed if you take risks. Because playing it safe, everyone's playing it safe. And it's just, you're just going to sit in the middle of the card if you're going to play it safe.
Yeah.
You got to find the thing. I said this to a couple guys last night, that weren't on the show. I said, you got to find a way to be undeniable. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And to be undeniable, you got to take some risks, because playing it safe isn't making yourself undeniable.
Yeah.
You've got to take a risk. If you're going to be on a show, if they're going to take away 5 minutes from the main event to put you on the show, you got to justify it. You've got to be undeniable. You've got to do it. And that's the only way it's ever going to work. Yeah. And I think more guys are getting that. I think more guys are starting to see that and realize it. I'm happy with the initiative I see with a lot of people of like pitching ideas or pulling people aside to ask ideas, or like the shows at last night. Like, I think every young guy on the card at one point had pulled over at least one veteran to ask, like, can you watch this and critique it? Can you help me?
Right.
So I love seeing that. I love that that's happening everywhere.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think that's a good place to put a tab in. I have more, but I feel like anything else I would pull out, we would go another hour.
We're going to come back and talk again eventually.
Yeah, you're my go-to guy.
Yeah, especially when I've had a night of drinking and want to talk wrestling.
Yeah. The as unpredictable as the outcome may be from those situations, it makes me feel better for that as opposed to, hey, man, I need you to... I'm playing Mass Effect. Fucking.
I'm deep into second playthrough on Mass Effect. Deep.
Were you, when I came over, were you deploying, whatever?
I did deploy a probe.
Deploying probes, that's
what
it was.
I'm My girlfriend doesn't like Mass Effect. At all. Meanwhile, she plays The Sims for like 35 hours a day. I know that's not a real time frame.
No.
But that's how much Sims.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. All
right. What are we going to do now?
I'm going to play a game.
Cool.
So, let's play a game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Last time you were on here solo,
yeah,
you played Trivia Takedown.
Yeah.
And
I didn't do well.
I'm just... I did think of a lot of trivia questions, but I'm going to give you another... option.
Okay.
That way you can choose.
All right.
What you want to do. We have Trivia Takedown again. Mm-hmm. We have Tinseltown and Tights.
Okay.
Where I read the description and you guess the movie name and the wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. We have Tag Rat, which is a name of guy.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah. And I have What's Your Finish, where I name.
Finisher,
and you have to guess the wrestler who's associated with the finish.
Okay. Let's do Tag Rat.
Cool. We will do Tag Rat. All right. I'm going to give you three guesses. Or three guys.
Three guys.
You choose a guy.
Okay.
And that's the guy we will do.
Okay.
So the guys I have here are Lance Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Rey Mysterio,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Jericho.
I'm going to do Jericho.
Jericho?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
You'll do Jericho.
Okay.
Jericho has six guys.
Six guys.
You have to at least get four.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you a minute to do so.
Okay. When do we start the clock?
Now.
Okay. First one, Jericho... is going to be Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second one for Chris Jericho, Lance Storm.
Yeah, that was kind of a good one.
Okay. So I got two on Jericho. Who else did he tag with? And we tag team titles with. Or was it an actual tag name?
Right. Yeah, 30 seconds.
Oh, jeez. This minute is going fast.
Yeah.
Oh God. Why did I just blank so hard on all of Jericho's tag career? Big Show. I'm like blanking hardcore.
15 seconds. I need
at least four more. Yep. Crap.
Five.
Yeah, I'm gonna lose this one.
Three.
Why did I blank so hard on Jericho's tag career?
Yeah. It's time.
Yeah.
Boy oh boy.
How did I'm trying to think about, I just blanked really hard on his tag career, because I was like, all of a sudden I was like, I don't think he tagged with anyone else, like, but he had so many other ones. Who else? I know I missed, like, a bunch of easy ones.
Chris Benoit.
Yeah, was in, like, SmackDown?
He was tag champions with him in 2001.
Yeah.
Let's see here. AJ Styles.
I would have never gotten that.
Y2AJ.
I would have never got that.
Christian.
Were they actually tag champs?
Mm-hmm.
I never thought they were champs. I know they tagged here or there, but I didn't think they were actual champs.
Yeah, they were champs for a short time.
Because then they went into that feud with 20 after that.
Right.
I never thought they were tag champs.
No, they were tag champs for a short time. And Big Show.
I did say Big Show. I said Big Show and Lance.
You did not guess Big Show.
Yeah, it was the first one I said.
Big Show.
Oh, that was the first one I said. But that doesn't matter. I only said two.
Wait, well then.
I said two, and I didn't.
You said Big Show and Edge?
No, I said Big Show and Lance Storm.
Oh, well then Edge.
Oh, Edge was the other
one. Edge was the other one. I thought Edge was the other one you said.
No, I said Big Show first, and then I said Lance Storm. Okay. But I didn't get Edge.
Well, then Edge was the other
six
one.
Six is tough. Yeah, he had I think that was, like, most of his tag run outside of, like, Show was, like, in that, like, 01 to 04 range.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really watch a lot then. I should have picked someone else.
Do you want to try to do another one since you kind of bombed so bad at that one?
Yeah, let's do one more.
All right, what do you want to do?
Let's do the trivia because I'll fail at that,
you
too.
You want to do trivia?
Then you can laugh at me.
All right, this will be fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's you have... How about this? I'll give you three.
Okay.
And you have to get two out of three.
Sure. Let's go for it.
Let's do it quick. The camel clutch is one of the most recognizable holds in pro wrestling. Yes. Who invented the hold? Was it Gorilla Monsoon, Gory Guerrero, Iron Sheik, or Angelo Poffo?
I mean, like, you want to say Iron Sheik. I actually don't know this. Because it's a camel clutch. Mm-hmm. But we'll say Gorilla Monsoon.
Gorilla Monsoon?
Yeah.
It was Gory Guerrero.
Gory Guerrero. Those Guerreros.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't Sheik, so that's close.
Who has the shortest WWE Championship reign in history? Is it Batista, Yokozuna, Rey Mysterio, or Andre the Giant?
Say those again.
Batista, Yokozuna, Rey Mysterio, or Andre the Giant?
Is it Yoko? Wait. Yeah, it's Yoko at WrestleMania 9.
No, it's Andre.
Really?
From the time he won it from Hogan, gave it to DiBiase.
Oh, that's... Did they even recognize that?
It happened. And the reign was a minute and 48 seconds.
Really?
Yep.
They really count that as a reign?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I thought the match got thrown out. Anyway, all right.
It did, but these questions are hard. let's see. We'll do this one. This is an oddball one.
Yeah.
On June 19th, 2002, Ken Shamrock won the vacant NWA World title on TNA's first ever televised show. Who did Shamrock defeat to win the title?
Can I guess without anyone saying or without the multiple choice?
Sure.
Because it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Was it Ron the Truth Killings?
No.
Damn.
It was Malice.
Oh, I would have known that.
Yeah.
There's no way I would have known that.
Yeah.
I'll just guess. I'll just guess K-Quick.
I'll give you... let me do one more. I'll give you the Andre one because that's kind of like nitpick. Yeah. That's nitpicking. I don't know.
I don't even know Yoko was next quickest.
that wasn't even really ranked or anything. Yeah, yeah. It was just four guys who have had short reigns.
Let's go for one more and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, then we'll wrap this up. I don't get to play these games very often, so when I get to do it, it's awesome. December 7th, 97, WWE held a tournament to crown the first light heavyweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the winner of that tournament?
Talk about Michinoku.
All right, see, there you go.
I know my Takamishinoku. All right? Don't fuck with me on that.
Of all the trivia, I know.
He beat Brian Christopher in the finals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, see, you got one.
I know that.
You got one of those.
Yeah, and it was a terrible tournament.
Yeah, it was not good. It's not a good tournament.
All right, well, I guess anytime I do games, I got to just do the numbers game.
Yeah,
that's I gotta be the I'm the ringer on that.
Basically,
one, I think that's my strong suit. The tennis lot and tights I know I would fail bad. That's not my strong suit at all.
Man, I can't. I really want to get Dale on so I can just.
Well, he's got to stop being busy.
Yeah, I know. Stop doing shit. Stop having your own business. I wanna play games with you.
That's really long. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Plugs and stuff, or
yeah. Find my social media, Marcus Mann, BHS, the Mark Mann 6 on Instagram, Marcus Mann on Facebook. September 16th, mm-hmm. Remix Pro Wrestling. I'll be there. Check out Rise Pro Wrestling. This is going to be, I don't know when this is out, probably this week.
Yeah, it'll be this week.
Yeah, July 29th, Stronghold Arena, August 12th.
Yeah, it'll be this day. Week for no one has any concept of time for.
Yeah. July 29th and August 12th, Rise. What else am I promoting? I'll say it again. I'm heading out October 13th, 14th, Monster Factory Super Camp. You guys should check that out. When we talk about character building, they do a really good job out there of working that out. Coaches are Les Thatcher, Kevin Kelly, Danny Cage, Glacier.
Yeah.
Glacier will be a coach there. Yeah. And I think Punishment Martinez is going to be there too. Mm. So a very good camp. I'm going. $200 is the camp.
Yeah.
Good price. If you can get 2 days, go. I think that's it. I mean, I'll be back probably in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. For the show. It's not like it'll be a long, long way away for you.
Yeah.
You'll be back.
We'll be back. All right. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. For Marcus Mann, I'm Matt Connor. Until next time, stay cool, ghouls. Really fascinates me how obsessed you are with, like, box office and shit.
I told Becca, I was like, Dunkirk made $50 million this weekend. What does that mean? I go, I don't know. Good for Chris Nolan.